get set. Go.
So I'm going to do a very brief kind of introduction into why I pitched this session. I know lots of the people in this room. My name is John Sheridan. I am a long-running GovCamper, so I've been to GovCamp since the first in 2008. So this is something, when I look at GovCamp, I see kind of like my own history, things I've been interested in and passionate about, and things that people I've known and worked with have been interested and passionate about. GovCamp's also had a real impact, and the people who've been here have had a real impact on what government does on the web. I also happen to be the digital director at the National Archives, and we run a thing called the UK Government Web Archive. And last year, we had a small conversation, particularly prompted by the issues with David Pearson's photographs on Flickr. And I've been thinking all year about how we might archive government and what the issues around that should be. Now, to make this real, we've been evolving our collections policy at the National Archives, and operating a thing called the UK Government Web Archive means we think that if GovCamp wanted to archive the web history of GovCamp, we would do the preserving. For the content that could be made available, also some of the access.
But so that, which we? The community or the National Archives?
The National Archives would be willing to do the preserving. And potentially the access through the UK Government Web Archives because of the relationship of context with the rest of the collection. Now that, just so you understand what that might mean, right? Once stuff is in an archive, it doesn't go away. It's the same people who are like looking after the Doomsday Book. So that would be a thing. And there's a question as to whether that's the most appropriate thing. Now, the other thing that's interesting about archiving GovCamp is that the record of GovCamp on the web is in a lot of different places. There's a lot on social media. There's some Yahoo groups from very early days. There's not very much, but bits and pieces.
So will you be doing retrospective archiving as well?
So as in
not just going
forward. Well, so this is the discussion, right? So it's like scene settings. There's a lot of content from a lot of different places. Web archiving tools, when we started GovCamp, basically all were the tools that have been developed by the Internet Archive. There's a brilliant standard called WARC, which allows you to manage a lot of like highly heterogeneous content, and there's a bunch of stuff around replay of content against standard WARC packaged web archive content. In the last few years, there's been some amazing tools for capturing content. In particular, there's a tool called Web Recorder. And what Web Recorder is brilliant for is for allowing, in quite a human iterative way, capturing content into the standard web archive format. But it's especially good where you've got like content on social media. Because it will go through, and you go to a Twitter stream on Web Recorder, it will pull all of the content on the Twitter stream, and it will then pull all of the embedded content. But it gives you quite a lot of kind of curatorial flex. It also allows you to capture more dynamic content and more transactional content. So we've been using Web Recorder a lot to do things like capturing user journeys on GovUK, and we've been doing a lot of work, obviously, around things like EU exit in a more kind of curated, targeted way. But using something like Web Recorder, or in fact Web Recorder, means that I think with not that much effort, we could quite quickly capture a wide range of the content that there is around GovCamp on the web. The Flickr images, the Twitter streams, as well as the GovCamp website, and potentially even the Google Docs. So we could, into a standard format, and there is a world-class archive who would be willing to do the preserving. So then the question is, should we? And what are the rules of the game around this in terms of the law, particularly around data protection? Like, I've got questions, conversations around that. Intellectual property. But I think probably a bit more fundamentally, just the ethics. What are the expectations of GovCampers in the present? What are the expectations of campers in the future? Who want to look back at the conversation we had? And of other people, this event was always meant to be for us now. So 2008, when the first campers got together, it wasn't, we're doing, it was like, we're getting together to have a conversation now about things that are important now. Post-GES, post all sorts of things that have happened, 12 years on, suddenly it looks important, impactful. So what do we think? Should we? The could we is yes, for sure. Should we, and what are the issues, and how do people think about it, and how do we engage in the conversation?
So I've got some evidence that we should. So I started the online grid, and then I think I did the collaborative documents the following year. But there was a session, I think the year after I'd started it, that Tim Lloyd pitched, this is Microsoft, and he said, let's go back and look at all the pictures
yes.
of the grids and
yeah.
fill in the missing data that you've got. And I think there was about six or seven of us that turned up to that session.
Okay.
So in terms of some evidence of, well, should we do it, there's obviously, I wouldn't know if you'd call it a need, but there was a real desire to try and capture at least what we were talking about, the titles of what we were talking about. Oh, and also, sorry, just one other thing. I never actually did any user research at all to discover if there was a need for the session grid. But in conversations I've had since, people have said they found it really useful, they took them back to their day job, they showed them to people in their offices. So, basically, that's more evidence for yes, we should.
The question is, are the National Archives bound to the right of different content? Or is there any exemption for
okay.
the National Archives? We
are sat, so if you look at, this is effectively law around handling different types of data, and in particular data about people, data protection. So if you look at the General Data Protection Regulation and the UK's 2018 Data Protection Act, the Data Protection Regulation, Article 89, provides for exceptions that member states can make to provide a legal basis for processing information. And one of those is archiving in the public interest. Now, the UK took advantage of the ability that's in the GDPR in the 2018 Act to take advantage of those, like the derogations. So in the UK, archiving in the public interest is a legal basis. And obviously, if you are the National Archives, that's what you do. The Public Records Act also allows us to take material that is not necessarily a public record.
Mm-hmm.
We've published a very detailed guide into archiving personal data writ large, which is a brilliant 50-page read.
Sorry, can you just say that again? You can take data which isn't public?
Under the Public Records Act, yeah. If you look at Section 2, then we have the legal right, the power.
Mm-hmm. But really, that's government documents, not people's documents.
So,
I think you mean public records versus...
No, we can preserve records that are not public records
uh-huh.
under certain conditions. Now, in the past, like going ways back, if you were, like, you know, let's say turn of the 19th into the early 20th century, if you were a famous aristocrat who had a big impact on UK public policy and you happened to know the keeper, then you would pass your family records of letters and so on into the archive. So we have quite a lot of material in the archive that is not public records, but is from certain, you know, generally it's rich and powerful families who've had a big impact on, you know, like, this is the UK, right? So you can guess who the kinds of people he is. And it's a little ways back, but we've been thinking really hard and carefully about our collections policy. The case particularly here is because we've been archiving government on the web for such a long time, the relationship between the community, and it's not just the, you know, archival thinking, it's not just the content of what government was on the web, which is the public record, it's the context. So if you want to understand why there's this massive change that happens in 2010, well, you can look at Martha Lane Fox's review in a kind of formal sense, but it's not insane to look at what people were talking about in 2008 and 2009 at GovCamp. That's part of the story too. So this content, this context basis, the fact that we're running the government web archive and the legal right that we have in the Public Records Act to hold material if we wish that isn't a public record, means that we can provide a home. The issue is then, well, geez, we also have this special privilege, right, of archiving in the public interest as a legal basis, and we're good at preservation. So that could all come together with the tooling. So it could be, right, we could really do this, or we might want to look at some other solution. But then that, well, should we even be like pulling on some of these things?
You say, should we? You mean National Archives versus, for example, say, the British Library?
Yeah, or...
Or the community doing it themselves.
Right. Mm. Or the Internet Archive, for that matter. Or, I mean, there's lots of... there's, and then should the people involved in GovCamp, should we put some effort and energy into doing this?
I've always found it really weird that there's hashtags for every single room in the GovCamp things, because it seems so... I can't even... nerdy or whatever, but... As you talk about archiving, it actually makes a lot more sense, mm-hmm. because if you're just following along with the stream, you know, you kind of don't care. But if you want to see, well, hang on, was this conversation happening in this room or that room? It makes sense. So there is obviously some longevity built into the structure of what we do at the moment. My only sort of slight concern is if it's socially acceptable for you to archive our tweets. Because at the moment, lots of people think of tweets as just this ephemeral thing. And I know that I've looked back, you know, when I perhaps started a new job and deleted a few unwise tweets, perhaps. You didn't hear that. Obviously, if you're saying something in public on Twitter, then it's in public. But, of course, I might be tweeting under my alt handle and, you know, no one knows that I'm at, you know, the Masked Singer. But in 10 years' time, when it becomes apparent, you know, that's who I am, do I want that thing associated with me and the... I don't know.
Okay,
so fundamentally, I think, yes, the answer is to this question, but I don't know. But I think it's something you'd have to explain at the start of every GovCamp. I mean, you don't legally need to get people's permission, but I think you need to socially take their permission.
There's the other thing, which is around... issues around capturing and long-term preservation and access. And those are very different things.
Okay.
And one of the things that, as an archive of government on the web, turns out government's not that different to you. one of the particular characteristics of the UK government web archive, which is a publicly available web archive, is we have a very sophisticated system that differentiates between what's in the archives or what's in the WARC files and what can you see, and manages that. So we can suppress either individual images, say, within a page, or we can suppress individual tweets, individual pages, or whole web domains, and indeed we routinely, for various reasons, often because someone's published something that they shouldn't have done, and now they need, there needs to be some remedy, we can and do take content down, which isn't remove it from the archive, it's just
review.
And you don't see it on replay.
Are you confident that you'll continue to have the funding and the staff to do that takedown operation?
Well, we're running around about 300,000 takedown rules, and some of those have stemmed from not least court cases, where by making available some information that has gone into the archive, the government has infringed somebody else's commercial interest, and there's a court order.
So I can see that sort of thing staying forever. It's more like, I didn't realise that, let's say, Yandex's speech recognition is getting better every day, and this being recorded, it might just be trivial easy to match it to me.
So, but this is the
something indiscreet.
So this is the issue. In 2008, when the photographs were being taken and people participating, facial recognition was not a thing.
It now is,
and that's a. And you've got some quite deep questions about who. what kind of say, particularly when you've got a community, what kind of say does the community have? And then who do you trust to do the mediation of all of those issues in the medium and longer term? Or is it best just to leave, which is also a viable answer, just to leave it in the hands of the people who we put the content in the first place, leave it in the hands of Twitter and how they run their service, and leave it in the hands of Flickr and how they run their service?
The big difference is that the Twitters and Flickers have the identity infrastructure to know that it's the account holder to come along and say, hey, that is me, take it down. Whereas someone could come along in a few years' time and say, that's me, honest, and I don't have my Yahoo Mail account anymore, but really, 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 it's me. And it puts your staff in a real position.
No, so we tend to, in those, I mean, for government staff, we generally find us, because we think like an archive, we think, not so, the access bit is beneficial, but really we're in the long-term preservation thing. So if there's a risk of infringement on one of a whole bunch of axes, then we will take things down. We tend to take things down immediately. But there are other archives that are available.
And I guess other places are archiving what we're saying and tweeting anyway. So, I mean, it's if someone wanted to do, you know, grab all the UKGC 20 tweets right now and stick them up on the web or in the Internet Archive, it's a few minutes work to do. So it's, just because you can do it well, which is a good thing, but we can't say don't do it because you might do it badly because someone else could do it badly anyway.
Sorry, thinking long term, I'm trying really hard to separate the short term interests, and I think I'm thinking of data protection and privacy and ethics as a short term thing. Thinking long term, this community, as you pointed out, has been pretty instrumental in changing the shape of public services in the UK in ways that, in some contexts, can't be reversed. So we started out way back when initially talking about social media and being a bit more open. That is sort of a political discussion, and we can't necessarily, you could imagine, hypothetically, there being a government that cuts off all social media activity. Not a great idea, but it's possible. What you can't imagine is a government that is delivering public services, or even a public sector that's delivering public services, that doesn't have to interact with citizens in some way. And doing that digitally is not really something we can go back from. We can evolve out of it into a better way in 50, 100 years, should a better way be available. But I feel like that's a pretty fundamental piece of how government has evolved and how the public sector has evolved in this country. And I think it's important to keep that, and I think it's important to keep that in a curated way with the rest of the public record. That's different to the Internet Archives mission, for example, which is tracking a different story and to which people will go to answer different questions.
I suppose the bit that I'm interested in is if I've got two hats, there's my camper hat. So what rights do I have as someone who turns up at GovCamp and participates? And what's the collective right based on, for everyone, because we're having impactful, meaningful conversations? what's the right of our future selves, and where's the centre of our kind of our collective understanding and appreciation of that, where we could do nothing, we could do something ourselves. We've got the know-how and the tools, and it's stuff that I can really help with as a camper, help us do something ourselves, or we could do something by talking to an institution, and you've at least one institution who might be willing to help if the community wanted to do something. So, but it's in that that real balance, and I agree. So, me personally, having taken part in these conversations, I think they've been important and impactful, and I don't want to see the record of what we've discussed just be lost. And I'm concerned that so much of that record is in the hands of other people who, for them, it's not on even their radar, they don't know. So I want to do something to make sure that we take that record seriously. So I think we should do something. And then a second order question of like who and how and doing. Bits of this are quite easy, and particularly using modern tools. Bits of this we could do just by, you know, like having a, we could probably do it in a day. You could imagine setting up a day for archiving GovCamp with a bunch of people who wanted to volunteer to do that. We'd then have a separate conversation about how much of that archive we should make available and to whom, and a separate conversation about how much of that archive we wanted to publish, if any of it.
How central to this vision is recording the actual room sessions? So that feels to me the bit most likely to change what we would get out of GovCamp. I've only been to three, but it's very similar to a lot of other public sectory barcampy things. People come along, and there's a very strong theme of, my manager just doesn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people this morning could see that this was one of the highlights of their professional year, because finally they're amongst people that they feel they can blow off steam with, they can complain about how hard it is to get stuff done, that there's this awkward character in their department. And I think they come here with the sense of it being semi-public, and the semi's going to go away in a few years, so this recording, if you say something like that in front of a computer, you're speaking to all of future humanity, I think.
Whoa, in context.
Yeah.
Hello, future humanity.
But you know, if we were sitting
that's
around like
speaking.
Plotting really evil things, like the future of humanity wants to know that we were plotting really evil things.
It's just blowing off steam and being able to go.
Maybe we think that.
It will drive that conversation into the pub, and not everyone to come to
the couch
for various reasons.
No, I completely agree. So I tried doing some videoing of bar camps like a decade ago, and some people were very happy for their talks to be filmed and questions, and some people just really weren't. I think something like
I nearly walked out on instinct, but
yeah, I think something like audio recording is aggressive, not the right word, but it's an aggressive statement that you are on the record. Now, you know, right, we're not sat in front of journalists right this second, but when James leaks that story to the press,
I'll be on the Daily Mail.
I instinctively don't like the idea of recording sessions, unless, you know, it really is a. Oh, do I? I don't know if I like recording sessions. I think it's the answer.
There's certainly value in it, but whenever you do it, you have to think, where am I driving
these
other conversations
to?
Have we
moved the discussion from let's archive what's out there to what would be best archiving for the future? Because clearly we don't have recordings for all the past sessions. So
if it's all about Twitter, then absolutely, suck it all in. But I think because we began with the recording machine.
I agree, I don't like the idea of recording them. And this for me is a complete one-off.
Yeah.
Can I get a cue after you?
No. Oh, sure. So, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, we can create spaces that are on the record and off the record and declare them as such.
Yeah.
And that, I think, will largely probably get around these issues. I mean, it might mean that you lose other things you don't want to lose, but at least everyone knows. Second of all, you know, if what we're interested in is archiving the evolution of the sort of the public service and particularly the community activity that has brought on that, I think there's a very strong argument for example, recording every single tweet that any public servant has ever done while they were in service, right? I mean, that's probably more useful, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
so
harder
it's
to carry.
You then drive them to set up parallel accounts for their lives. And
I mean, you know, but then we still have the past 15 years, right? Still pretty interesting. I mean, as someone from civil society, like, I would want that, you know, definitely. So where does the boundary of this discussion go? Like, if we're going to try and archive this movement, I think that's, you know, it's not just about this event, right?
It's an interesting question. I'm going to bypass your question and go back to what I was going to say, because I don't really know how to respond to that, but I'm glad you asked it. What I was going to say is that practically, we could, to start to address all of the questions and concerns we've got, come up with, as a community, come up with a list of everything that could be in scope.
Mm-hmm.
Every Twitter account, every recording, every photo from Flickr, every photo from Instagram, every whatever, and put it out there and give people a few months or whatever set period of time to opt out, to explicitly
mm-hmm.
then come back and say, yeah, you can have stuff from this account of mine, but not this account, or whatever, to then be able to refine it in an early stage.
Well, we could maybe even do a little bit more in terms of the, like, helping develop the case in terms of a case for, but also some of the potential harms. Which varies for each of those things in terms of your in terms of the likely expectation at the point that the thing was captured, and the kinds of expectations in terms of onward context of use. So, where a blog posting is in a different place from a tweet, is in a different place from a photograph that was taken. I'm reasonably relaxed about having my picture taken, but. I probably wasn't thinking that it was like permanent for real. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a maybe try and like unpack a little bit of that through to some of the things which are just about aiding the compilation of some written notes. Where
so I think with my former GDS hat on, it comes down to user needs for alpha users. In that, yes, I think around here we're all agreed that archiving public stuff is probably, well, legally fine, probably a good idea, and there needs to be some talk about, well, how public do you make that archive? And that's what comes down to user need. So for you, a user need of someone has tweeted once about UK GovCamp, I want to see all their tweets forever, okay? From my point of view, I've just been going through my blog, and I've just found literally thousands of dead links of blog posts which, you know, some of which are on the Internet Archive and some are just lost in the wind. So I definitely want to be able to link to an archive version or someone's blog post or someone's tweet. I've got lots of embedded tweets and people have deleted their accounts, sometimes because they've died, sometimes because they've, you know, moved on or whatever. So I think, yes, this sounds like a brilliant idea. We should do it, but I think we should just get some user stories around, or some user needs, just to sort of set the scope. Well, A, as you're saying, what the community finds acceptable, but also where those weird pain points are going to be.
Also give us a sense of where consent plays a role.
Mm.
So it may well be, say, well, if I've written a book about my experience at GovCamp, then you do want positive consent from the blogger to have it into a GovCamp archive. That's a thing that we manage.
Thank you. I was at an event in the last few days called Archives, Access and AI, which I think some of your colleagues, John, would have been at the University of Loughborough. And there's an interesting topic on trust in the archive and on sensitivity review. So the thing that Hadley was saying around kind of having a period of time where people could opt out, I think that would be an opportunity for people to kind of highlight, you know, within that period, you know, what things they think might be sensitive, and that, you know, there are some things that are kind of context dependent. So, you know, you might be relaxed about having your photo taken, but perhaps there's a particular photo with a particular person who's also agreed to have their photo taken in a particular place that could be sensitive if you knew some other information around it. I'm not saying that that's going to happen at GovCamp, but there could be context specific sensitive information. So yeah, I think that would be kind of a good way to.
And maybe the thing to do would be to see if there's appetite amongst the community to try doing some archiving practically for ourselves in a community context, mm-hmm. to see what we have, and then to reflect on that in terms of what kind of material do we have, and what do we think the issues are. So like, it's a kind of a bit more proceed with a little bit of caution and care. Iteratively, I think the user need point is very interesting, because one of the big user needs for me is like my own personal need for reflection and understanding as part of the community over time.
What about other channels? You mentioned Web Recorder, which obviously you can output in kind of standard formats and XML, whatever. I was actually thinking the other day, because I've never been to BookCamp before, and I was thinking about on conferences, and I just checked on Wikipedia, and there's no reference to GovCamp whatsoever. And, you know, actually kind of looking to other channels where you could actually, you know, you might be able to identify bits of, you know, photos or blogs that could actually build a page. Obviously, I tried to do this at work, and the whole of Whitehall is blocked from editing Wikipedia. So I wait until I was home until I could do that. But, you know, yeah, if you try to edit Wikipedia from within 100 Parliament Street, certainly, you are blocked. There's probably you could go through a proxy or something, but I wouldn't be bothered.
So much for openness.
Yeah, but you know, I think just having something like that, that you, where people could, you could point to and say, oh, GovCamp is a thing that actually exists and it's an unconference, would be kind of a start in some ways.
So I think another perspective on this could be that like the memory function of GovCamp isn't very good, and having the National Archive support, you know, by archiving things so that things like blog posts disappear, it can support that community activity. But I think like that community activity is very poor. I think a lot of what happens a lot is like you have the same sessions over and over again every year, right? And like the learnings don't carry on very effectively. So that might be a different way to respond to this offer.
It's a nice way of thinking.
So what I worry about with this, like, because like I think I'm broadly like leaning towards it being a really good idea because I can see myself using it. But what I worry about is about unintended consequences, like maybe actually the ephemeral nature of the discussion and what we do is a selling point for some people, and that, yeah, you can provide avenues for people to try to opt out of some of that recording, but actually what will end up happening is though the people who are really bothered by that just won't turn up at all.
Yeah.
And like, even just for really basic stuff, like if you're just recording all of the session titles, if you pitch them, that's already enough probably to either stop people from coming or to discourage people from pitching something that maybe is close to a line that they perceive.
Record keeping is all about power. All about power, fundamentally.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing like a state.
Do you keep tabs on how often things are accessed? Because one of the things that strikes me is we have Becky typing up the notes from this session, and everyone's typed up notes from previous sessions. But I don't know if anyone has ever gone and looked at those previous Google Docs. I mean, we have no analytics on those Google Docs, I'm assuming, but if they were stored in the National Archives, presumably, you know, we'd be able to get some analytics to say, actually, this session, for some reason, has attracted lots of attention from people reading about it or citing it in other articles and stuff like that. So something that...
Yeah, that's another whole... Right,
oh, it's a whole thing, right.
Yeah, that's a whole world, so... okay.
Does anybody know sort of social science investigations on how people's willingness to speak at an event like this is correlated with their sense of the size of audience? Now, there were a few people this morning saying, first time here, first time pitching. You know, there's like, what, 20 of us in the room? And I'm relatively on the shy end of the spectrum, but I'm also relatively opinionated and reasonably old now. So I'm mouthing off. And if I was 25-year-old me, I would not have said a word by now. And if I was picturing an audience, which wasn't just you lot, but government search engines and the web at large, I doubly would not open my mouth. I'd worry exactly your concern about the unintended consequences of people's sense of audience changing.
But if you'd written a blog...
Some people are comfortable like that, some people
aren't.
Yeah.
I was just saying, the thing for me, I think, is thinking back to, 10 years ago, GovCamp, that felt like, coming back to what you both said a little bit, like, the way that we might have shared and used things like Twitter felt quite different to how it does now. It was almost like although that content is and was at the time public, it was public in a different way to what it is now.
It was a different public audience.
Yeah, totally. And I...
So happy you were deaf.
They were. And like for me, the power of GovCamp has always been that environment where it's been a safe space and there's been levels of that safety where it was always... Okay, I think hopefully still is to say this is off the record and this is a non-tweeted session, but like that really has changed. I think we'd be really mindful of some of that early context.
I've just been asked if we'd like to capture who's here. We'll send around.
how do I get? How do I appropriately get consent to publish that?
Well, this audio.
Yeah.
I mean, you asked everyone if it could be recorded.
Well, I don't think that's enough.
That's different
yeah.
to publish.
I suppose it is.
Yeah. Mm. Is the most appropriate way that people have to come to me individually and give their permission for me to publish it?
I think just ask now.
I'd rather not put people under pressure.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
I think that's probably your best bet.
Okay, so you've all got to come to me and say yes, otherwise that won't get published. At some point during the day.
James, yes.
Thank you.
So
thank
I'm
you.
Gonna forget.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it, but
yes.
I feel bad, so yeah, sure.
that's
the dynamic I'm worried about. So
yeah, I'm worried about that as well.
I think there's also something interesting. So I remember those early days of GovCamp when the people that we were tweeting, that I was tweeting to, were my friends who should have been in the room and couldn't for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And it was great to be able to extend the reach and include the community, include them in the active community. And the fact that it was public was just a better way to reduce the friction to our community functioning well. Here we are, 12 years later. And yes, I'm very conscious of the trolls and the press and the nasty stuff that goes on, particularly on Twitter. But I'm also aware that my responsibilities as somebody working in the civil service are much more, they're different. And I have archive responsibilities and I have freedom of information responsibilities. And I'm very conscious when I'm talking in session, but particularly when Brexit, the referendum was happening and immediately after, as we as a community were trying to figure out what that meant for us. I was very conscious of what I was saying in sessions and what kind of long-term or public impact that might have. And it's interesting to me to hear all of you talking to realize how much that might not be a universal way of thinking across the community. And I guess that poses then the question, which is tied up in all this, of should it be? Are we creating a public record? Or is this a safe space to be able to talk and brainstorm off the public record, and then the public record happens in the blogs and the tweets and the stuff we produce publicly? Or
are they
on the other side of that fence?
I think we've been kicked out of this room.
Yes, because
it's a big question. Good question.